So please welcome Bruno Oliver.
If I was that good, I'd be making money at this. This is not a crutch. This is a destination. Because this is actually a story about a $40, actually it was like $50 shot of whiskey. And I'd always wondered when I was younger what kind of a person buys a $50 shot of whiskey. When, of course, now as I got older, and I think many of you realize it's not what kind of a person, it's what drives a person to buy a $50 shot of whiskey. It's an interesting thing with somebody, you know, when the topic of this becomes bad jobs and you know, 2 days later somebody calls you and says, you must have one. And you wonder, oh, well, okay, what do people think of me that I must have a bad job story? And I realize it's probably because I know I've talked about a lot of jobs, and I've had a lot of jobs. And I would encourage anybody to do this, but sometimes it's fun to sit down and actually try to write them all out, which I tried to do. And I wasn't entirely successful, but this is a start of my job. I'm going to start with the youngest job, as Tom sort of set up. I think it's a good place to start. Selling lemonade, first job, okay? That was, next thing was selling sand to neighborhood kids. Sandbox replacement sand. They hadn't figured out that they were like a block away from the beach. Okay, here we go. Bussing tables. Now, this is Paul's Italian American Kitchen in Long Island. The first of many restaurant jobs. It was also the job where, similar experience where you have a townie job in a tourist town is a very strange sort of thing, especially when I wasn't from Long Island. So in the restaurant category, the following positions: busser, barista, runner, salad prep guy, sandwich maker, dishwasher, expediter, back waiter, front waiter, side waiter, there is such a thing, host, maitre d', bartender, which is where I was first really amazed by people buying those kind of shots, assistant manager, manager, general manager, wine steward, special events coordinator, and perhaps obviously a restaurant consultant for several years. These jobs were held at the following restaurants, from Connecticut to L.A.: Downey House, Alumni House, Coyote Grill, Panama City Bar and Grill, Tijuana Bar and Grill, Southwestern theme for a while there, 90 Degrees, something in Chicago that began with an M on Clark Street. You're from Chicago, talk to me later. Pip's Grill, Lush Life, The Set, Marco's Supper Club, Hoppies, Cucina Cucina, S something or other in Bellevue, Washington, Red Los Angeles, Red Santa Monica, La Serena, Pastis, Saint-Germain Bakery and Cafe in Chicago. There's many hellish stories. There was an owner there. The owner's wife was a cross between like Charo and Freddy Krueger. And she once accosted me at a table while I was trying to pour a bottle of wine with these 5-inch nails that were painted multicolored. And she came right up in my face and she went, "You, in the kitchen, I'm going to talk to you afterwards." Like that. Just like, and I didn't spill a drop with wine. Scoozy, and at least 10 more restaurants that I can't even begin to recall the names of. And that, of course, doesn't take into account all the catering gigs, which, again, is a whole list like this. Okay, off of food service, on to the next sort of all the other sort of random jobs, I'll call them. Babysitting, radio play research, where you would call people and find out what songs they were listening to, and you would play like 30 seconds of a song, which were always the most hideous top 40 songs that I had to listen to the first 30 seconds of repeatedly. And the worst part about that job actually was that your opening pitch was, you know, click, "Hi, I'm calling from Radio Research, and is there a 16 to 18 year old girl in the house that I can talk to?" They really should have rewritten that one. I was a major event tent setter upper person. I was an elevator operator, data entry at Dean Witter or Anderson or Morgan Stanley, one of those places. I was a low rent cowardly lion. That's the one we're coming back to. A loading dock worker at the Merchandise Mart in Chicago, a picture framer. I was a male prostitute. Hold on. I was a male prostitute. It was accidental. It was a case of mistaken identity. And it wasn't that bad, so I can't talk about it. Various acting jobs, some of which actually paid me. Box office ticket seller. I was a door-to-door Grolier's Encyclopedia salesman in southern Indiana in July. The insult to injury being, of course, that Grolier's is the worst encyclopedia. And finally, most depressing, though not the worst necessarily, I was the guy at American Family Publishers sweepstakes who had to reply to semi-literate crayon-scrawled letters that came including pictures of like amputees and inbred families or the dental work they needed. They were always addressed to Ed McMahon, And I had to send them prefab letters explaining that as much as Ed McMahon would like to help them, he personally could not guarantee the outcome of the sweepstakes. So that was the most depressing, not the worst. Ironically, I forgot my current job, which is a basically it's an internet computer company that caters to actors, agents, and casting directors, where today we lost power. And you, it's a good thing, though, because it really wasn't that bad, because actors and agents and casting directors are so patient and understanding all the time. Made for not such a bad day. Getting back to that as quickly as possible. What makes a bad job? I was thinking a little bit about what makes a bad job. And basically, it was pointed out before, one of the requirements of a bad job is just not worth the money that you're paid for. Okay, we can all agree, that's a bad job. It's not worth the money you were paid for. And another sort of, for me, a definition has been jobs have been taken out of desperation. And in the June of 93, I took a job, a one-day gig that was taken out of desperation. In June of 93, I had finished my first year of graduate school. I had also finished my 4 years of marriage. It was a weird time. And I needed money. I had no girl. I had no money. I had no sunshine because I was living in Seattle when the sun doesn't come out until July. It's a very depressing kind of on top of you. So I get a call from an event coordinator person who needs some actors to portray Wizard of Oz characters. And she thought I would be good for the Cowardly Lion. And of course, the first thing one goes through mind is, okay, I'm gaining weight, okay, because I should be, shouldn't I be the Scarecrow or something, or the Tin Man? But no, it's got to be the Cowardly Lion. So, all right, I need some money. This job is going to pay $75 for a whole day. All right, this is going to be interesting. Now, I've just finished my first year of grad school, so I know things about makeup, too. I'm looking forward. This is going to be a great opportunity to really do Cowardly Lion makeup. And I'm going to do a little research and really get that lion quality, which I did a little vocal work to get a lion quality. Of course, I probably should have just watched the movie, but that would have been far too easy. Day before the job, package shows up in my house, and it's from the event coordinator. She's had it messengered over. And it's a box, and I open it up, and I realize, oh, this is going to be my Cowardly Lion costume. I'm excited. You know, I've already done a test run on the makeup. So I open up the box, and it's a Cowardly Lion costume. Only it isn't really the Cowardly Lion costume like you've seen in the movie. It isn't anything like I expected. It's two pieces of brown, basically, pajama. That have been combed so they have a little bit of texture. The legs go down to about here. The paws come up to about where my socks presently come up to, just about my ankle there. So there's a lot of very un-lion-looking skin. The top is basically like a little kid's pajamas. I mean, it really did look like, you know, you would give this to a kid as pajamas when they were little. Only they had put a mane around it, which was made out of yellow, or just some other color that had been yellowed, yarn. Layers and layers and layers of yellowed yarn. Big, huge, honking yarn. And of course, the hat was the same, with just yellow yarn going all over the place. And two little ears that were made out of some wire-covered fabric, but the wire was sticking out on both sides. You see the wire, so it looked a little bit like my favorite Martian. Did a little repair work on this thing as best I could, because I was trying to have some pride about this job. I put it on the next morning. They sent it to our house, of course, because they couldn't rent a hotel room for us at the convention center where we were actually going to meet the people. So we had to drive to the job in the lion outfit. So I had to put it on at home, which was a little embarrassing. I realized when I looked at myself in the mirror, I thought, this is the dumbest costume I've ever seen in my life. I mean, you know, a crystal meth addict, alcoholic mother with the jitters 20 minutes before a Halloween party could have done a better job for that poor kid than this thing that I was wearing at this point. I actually got to the hotel where we were supposed to meet without being pulled over, which was pretty good, because I sped the whole way because I thought, oh, this is, you know, if I get pulled over, it's going to be too embarrassed. We come into the hotel, and they've told me that I'm supposed to meet them in a convention or a meeting room, see something or other. It was the wrong convention room. It was the wrong floor. I'm wandering around on floor 2 for about 40 minutes before I have to go down to the concierge in the front lobby in a major hotel in Seattle on a weekend of a huge convention with people coming in. The best part of the day was the concierge just looking at me from a distance, from about 40 feet away, just going... You could see him thinking, oh, wow, I hope he doesn't want, like, you know, Sonic's tickets or something. I just don't have those. He told me where to go. I went to the room, which was before anybody had shown up except this event coordinator and the other actors who had been hired. I was the first person there. I imagine the other people were on floor, whatever, wandering around. Frightening whatever guest might happen to be there. She explains to me that what we're going to be doing is it's a convention. There's a huge convention in Seattle at that point, which as far as I could make out was a convention about how to put on a convention. It was kind of a marketing convention thing. I never understood exactly what it was, but our particular group was from Ohio. And these about 200 people in this room, we were supposed to entertain them with this script that they had handed us, which was all full of sort of industrial marketing jargon stuff that makes no sense to anybody except people who are deeply involved in marketing. And we would go in and we were supposed to entertain them, do a little speech about marketing techniques that work, and then leave. All right, this isn't so hard, okay? There's not a whole lot of script here. The other actors show up. I happen to know one of the other actors who was in my class in grad school, and she looked equally as pained that here we are on our route to Master of Fine Arts. And she was playing Dorothy. Her costume actually looked pretty good. But she informed me later that, in fact, it was her own clothing. And that the costume that she had gotten was a Germanic Swiss Miss outfit that was apparently the best they could get for her. She was able to put together something a little bit better. The Tin Man shows up, and the Tin Man, of course, is in, like I am, sort of a pajama-suited thing with absolutely no texture whatsoever. He's gone out of his way to sort of make little arm, out of styrofoam, he made some arm things, so he had some roundness quality to him as opposed to draping linen. However, he obviously ran out of time because all he had was those. So, in fact, he looked a little bit more like, you know, Hercules with wristbands, stopping arrows. And he had done a fairly good job on the makeup and all, and I terrified him by saying, you know, which makeup did you use? You know, Buddy Ebsen in the actual movie had to leave the movie because he almost died because he was using the wrong makeup. And so he spent that entire day in terror that he had used the wrong makeup. I explained to him that that was almost impossible to do this day unless you basically put zinc on your face. And then the Scarecrow showed up, and his outfit was equally as bad. But again, he was another true, trying to be a professional actor. So he had gone out to a farm the night before and taken quite a bit of straw. And he's a New Yorker. And he had no experience with straw. He did not understand that despite however many rolling the hay stories you might hear, it itches. It's awful. You don't want it anywhere near your bare skin. So he was living in his own private hell. My hell in terms of costume at that point was beginning to feel a little less uncomfortable, at least. You know, I mean, I had the yarn on my head. And I had painted my legs brown to sort of match the clothing a little bit, but it wasn't terribly uncomfortable, at least. It was a little baggy. I was a little embarrassed by the tail, because the tail was long enough, actually, that it would hit the ground, but I would constantly step on it, and it, of course, was just, you know, a piece of, like, fabric with more yarn at the back of the thing. So, we get our script. We rehearse a little bit. They take us over to the big room where the convention's going to be, about 200 people. And without any sort of prep, they don't tell us what's inside or anything. They say, okay, now you go in and you do your first scene. And we walk in and we do the first scene and everybody's there and they're looking at us. We have no idea what we're really supposed to be saying, so we're making stuff up all along. I wish I could remember what the text was of these things because it was so inane. All I remember at one point or another that Dorothy... is saying, you know what, I don't know how to get people interested. I mean, how are we going to get people interested in this particular event? And the Scarecrow said something or other, and I remember the idea of hooks, which I guess is a marketing word, you know, need a hook, get them in there, a hook, and an interesting idea. And I had to say, sort of in a paraphrase of the movie, I do believe in hooks. I do believe in hooks. I do. I know I knew what I was talking about. I'm not shortchanging you either. I must say that my lion at that point was no more like Bert Lahr's lion then than it was tonight. So I didn't miss anything there. After the first one, this becomes a little easy. Basically, we walk in, we do our thing, we walk across the stage with this, we say the stuff we don't understand, we come back down, we leave. We didn't have a Toto, by the way, which was a little bit depressing. But they had actually written dialogue for a Toto if we had a Toto, which was a little confusing. So it was like, well, did you want to see the dog, or was somebody in a dog costume? Which, of course, was a little disheartening because I thought I would have loved to have seen that costume. Now, in this convention, there was this one set of parents who had brought their child. She was about 6 years old. I had no idea what her name was. She'd call her Angelica or something. She had that curly blonde hair, that just angel child kind of thing. And she was in a little blue dress. And I don't think these people had gotten out of Ohio very much. So this was a big event for them. And but apparently their babysitter, or the babysitter that the hotel was supposed to supply, bailed or something. So they had brought it, and they didn't know what to do. So we're spending most of her time in the room outside of the meeting room. So we think, all right, well, we'll take care of the kid. We don't want any money. She's cute. She's adorable. And most of all, she loves us. She, despite what we looked like, recognized us for who we were supposed to be. And just, I mean, we could do no wrong by her. So we took turns playing with her, and then we would, you know, take her into the room, and we'd sit her in the corner and say, okay, you stay there. We'd go in, and we'd do our little scene. We'd come back out, and I'll play with the girl for a little while. And so this goes on and on and on for about an hour and a half. At the end, the last piece that we did is we went back on stage and we talked about some more marketing jargon that I don't understand and said, and now, in a few minutes, you're going to meet the theme for next year. I should go back a little bit here. We're the Wizard of Oz characters because Seattle is known as the Emerald City. So that's why Wizard of Oz was the theme for not only this particular group of people, but the entire convention about conventions. So we go back out in the waiting area. We're playing with the little girl for a while. We don't know what the theme is for next year. It's going to be a surprise. Elevator door is open, just in the corner. And all of a sudden, from out of this elevator, pops a guy in a suit, a real official-looking guy in a suit. And behind him is a full-size Mickey. Big old Mickey. And we're like, oh, okay, so next year must be in Orlando. It must be Disney, whatever. And we're like, so that must be the theme for next year. Big Mickey comes around the corner. That little girl sees Mickey, doesn't even look back at us with sort of a goodbye look. Sees Mickey, goes, Mickey! Whoom, whoom. And she is on Mickey. On him. And we're okay. The only thing to that point that had made this job even slightly worth it was the adoration of this child. And it was now taken away from us quickly and cruelly. Mickey doesn't have too much time for her, unfortunately, because Mickey's got to go in for his big presentation. Mickey and what I can only describe as, I guess, a Disney handler walks him in, which is probably a good idea because I guess it's fairly hard to see around in those things, you know? And so, you know, he helps them into the room and they come out. Everybody comes out. All the people come out. The parents come out. They meet us. They're thanking us for taking care of the child. Mickey comes back out. The daughter sees Mickey and she's like, I want a picture with Mickey. I want a picture with Mickey and the Wizard of Oz people. I want a picture of Mickey and the Wizard of Oz people. Okay. All right, we can do that. Parents will get their camera out, and they tell us all to line up. So we all line up. We've got Dorothy and the Scarecrow and the Tin Man, and we've got little Angelica right there, and we've got me, the lion with the yellow yarn, and we've got Mickey. So we call Mickey over, and we're trying to line ourselves up here and do the kid, and, you know, it's me and Mickey, and I'm trying to talk to Mickey a little bit, you know, and I'm like, is this really hot in there? You know, this is really, really hot. And Mickey turns around to me really, real quietly, but still in his Mickey voice, and goes, it's really fucking hot. Just loud enough that I could hear it, but Angelica couldn't. I realized, this is a pro. I had no idea it was a man or woman, but this is a pro who was able to talk through that thing, knew just how loud to be, you know? And I imagine that many a time this person had told many a parent, you know, fuck off, and they never heard it. Never heard it, but that Mickey was able to get it out. We're about to take the picture. Parents are lining up the camera. Just before that flash can go off, the Disney handler guy comes up from behind us, physically puts a hand physically, as opposed to another way you can put a hand on somebody, puts a hand on myself and puts a hand on the Mickey and throws us apart with full force. I go flying over this way, knocking over the other people. Mickey goes flying, regains his, her composure or whatever the actor was. Angelica is, which I don't know if it's a real name or not, but I just like the name, is screaming at this point. Parents are in complete suspended, frozen animation. Camera just about to click it. They don't know what's going on. Mickey Mouse handler guy, Disney handler, comes out. Parents are like, what are you doing? Why can't we take a picture? It's crying. I'm getting angry at the guy, you know. I've got my courage. I've got my lion courage. Come on! You know, it's just a little girl. We just want to take a picture. He says, I can't allow you to take a picture with Mickey. I'm like, why not? You know, I mean, people take pictures of Mickey at Disneyland all the time. He says, no, I can't allow you characters to have a picture with Mickey. Why? Because you're Wizard of Oz characters. I'm like, so what? Well, you're not wearing officially sanctioned Wizard of Oz uniforms. So you can't have a photograph with Mickey. What? Apparently, Disney owns the characters of the Wizard of Oz, though they don't actually own the movie rights. And because we weren't officially sanctioned Wizard of Oz characters, by a long shot, we were not allowed to take that picture. Parents are upset. They take the girl screaming away. Our days now, we're just crushed. We're like, oh my God, all I want to do is take a picture with the girl. We traipse ourselves off back into the room where the event coordinator is there, where we have one more job that we have to do. We have to lead these 200 people in groups of about 50 each onto waiting buses at the bottom of the hotel and take them across town to the convention center in L.A. and then lead them up to the main convention room where apparently similar groups, though I don't know whether they're entertained by similarly dressed Wizard of Oz characters or not, around the city are all going to convene on this massive convention about conventions where there are booths about how to throw conventions or something. All right, okay, we can do this. So we start traipsing off. I take one group of 50 and we walk down and we get on the buses. We shepherd them on the buses, get stuck in traffic. The people on the buses are a little bit rowdy. They want me to sing the songs from the movie. I don't know the songs from the movie. I sang a Gershwin tune. That's what I'd been working on in graduate school and it was all I knew at that moment. Which entertained them, inappropriate though it was. It wasn't Night and Day. That's a Cole Porter scene. It was Night and Day. Cole Porter. Anyway, we get to the convention center. Buses unload. We all get there about the same time. Buses unload. The four of us get together, and we see that there's a yellow brick road that they've made from where the buses get off all the way inside. Wow, this is actually kind of cool. So at that point, we're having a little bit more fun, so we do the little dance. You know, we're all just, I can't do the thing. But and we're singing that song, and we're leading them up, and the people behind us are singing, and it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun at this point. And we go up these escalators, and we follow the yellow brick road around to the main door of the convention center, and they have put huge, like a story tall, green sparkles all over the doors. They look just like the Emerald City in the movie. And it's really cool. And they put a big knocker on it, too. And so we thought, oh, okay, I guess we're supposed to knock, you know. And then we come in, and I guess there'll be, like, Munchkin-type peoples or the, you know, that's all horse. We get a color guy. We'll come out and welcome the people in. And we know that that's the end of our duty. That's the end of our duty. Okay. Dorothy bangs on the thing. They have an electronic thing, which I didn't see an electronic thing. I think there was somebody like hiding away with a little electronic speaker that went bong, bong, bong every time she hit the thing. It was made out of styrofoam. The doors open. Big, huge doors open. They must have had some people behind open. And on the other side of the door, lined up exactly the same we are more Wizard of Oz characters. The same Wizard of Oz characters. Only they have the officially sanctioned costumes.
What?
And there's this moment, and we look at them, and I'm looking at this lion, and this lion even has a tail that is like going around above his head like this. And I'm looking at him, and he's looking at me, and we're not quite sure who's more embarrassed. The Dorothy, everybody, one by one, looked identical. And the thing that broke this silence was this little yipping, and they had a little Toto Terrier. And then, you know, there's another little sign there, because none of us have been prepared for this. We didn't know what we were supposed to do. Guy's playing the Tin Man very audibly, so that pretty much everyone around just looks at the situation and he goes, well, fuck me. turns around and he leaves. We don't know what to do, so we're like, okay, they're yours now. You know, we're not a character at any point. Yeah, at this point, we're like, here you go. You know, and we just trudge off. You know, it's the end of the Wizard of Oz story. Only we are in worse shape than you know the Poppy Fields sequence. I never saw the Tin Man guy for like months after that too. I get into my car. I take off my clothes in the parking lot of the hotel. Because I can't bear to be in them for 1 second longer. I try to wipe off the makeup on my face, but I don't think I did a particularly good job, judging by the reaction of the waitress at the restaurant I went to. A fair amount of the makeup still on. I had $75 in cash. I went to an expensive restaurant. I stopped on the way home. I saw the restaurant. It was downtown Seattle. I said, that's an expensive restaurant. This cash can't come home with me. This cash can't come home. This cash needs to be spent before I get home. So I went into this restaurant. I'm in jeans and a t-shirt, and everybody's really nicely dressed. It's about 9 o'clock at night at this point. And I order an expensive meal, and I get to the end of that meal, and I still have $40 left. You know, it wasn't as expensive a restaurant as I thought it was going to be. So I said, I have to spend $40, and that is how I discovered when one buys a $40 shot. This is not a $40 shot of whiskey, unfortunately, though today was the kind of day where I really did deserve it. But this is that's how one gets to a $40 shot of whiskey. I hope it never happens to any of you. I'm sure it has happened to most of you at some point or another. I encourage you to treat yourself at the end of any bad job.